is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. This is Guardian AM. And I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, sitting in. And we are going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation, a quick conversation. We are going to talk primarily about the Ukraine war and how that may be impacting us on this side of the world. You know the numbers to join us. 323-6232, 325-4316. 325-4259, and our text line is 422-4796-422-GR96. As we take a look at the newspaper very quickly, government advises caution on Russian dealing. Bahamas still considering sanctions against Russia. And we see Pauline Davis, who's her book signing, one of the Golden Girls, doing wonderful things, have done wonderful things for the country. We want to say congratulations to her. On the launch of her book, we definitely need to connect and get a copy of that. FNM calls it marital rape. This is a discussion which is raging, not something I'm going to talk about at this point in time. I have my own views. For the one thing I want to say, I really can't understand why this isn't a black and white issue. Russian tanker was docked in Freeport, port controller says. Former Ukrainian diplomat says government should consider freezing Russian assets. So even we here in the Bahamas, persons like to ask, you know, what is it that the Bahamas can do? Bahamas is small, don't have no big role to play. But hey, we'll look at what has been asked. BPL chairman Fuel Hedge did not produce expected cost saving. Historical cash drop. Government subsidized company now near insolvency. Roll says the effectiveness of the current hedge arrangement is directly related to the mix of fuel. Former AG says the financial service sector is well equipped to deal with Russia sanctions, and the government is being urged to cap the price of gas tax. So it's happening. It's a big, big issue out there as far as this war is concerned and the potential impact or the potential implications that it has for the rest of the world. And so the question is, what is it that we are going to do? Banks are urged, don't leave buyers holding the bag. Bahamas to feel brunt of Russian sanctions. That's a piece carried in the Tribune with some quotes from myself. Chamber chief urges VAT gasoline cap. So there's a lot there. And we are going to try to, you know, drill into some of these very quickly. We don't have a lot of time. It's a very short show, but we're going to get into them. So firstly, let's ask ourselves, what impacts? What are the potential impacts? Other than, you know, and most of these I think we do know, but what are some of the impacts which we must consider, we must contemplate as a result of this Russia-Ukrainian war? And I have pulled out some information from Ian Stewart, who is Deloitte's chief economist in the UK. And he shared a number of issues, which I'm going to kind of drill into, because I think he's onto some very important perspectives in terms of same issues, but very important perspectives. So the first one he talks about is the radical act of deglobalization. The West has disconnected Russia from much of the developed world. It's interesting that he used the term deglobalization. Kind of suggests that the entire West represents the world. Not quite so, but we understand where that is going. And the fact of the matter is, we have seen over the last recent while where Russia has been cut off by SWIFT, have been cut off by a number of significant institutions and countries too. Countries have levied sanction on the country. One of my biggest concerns for this is, generally speaking, we always see sanctions going out towards a particular entity. And often we ignore that and say, that's, them trying to mash up Russia. But there's always unintended consequences. And the truth of the matter is, a sanction cannot be clinical and clean as it might be intended. And so when sanctions are levied on Russia, there is a economic blowback, even on the entity, even on the country which is levying those sanctions. And so when the United States now have decided that it is going to put a ban on Russian oil, the United States itself is going to suffer. It will have to draw down on its strategic reserves, maybe to kind of dampen the cost. But costs of fuel and costs of energy in the United States definitely will rise. On this side of the world, we will see increased pressure as a result of demand and supply. Because such a ban, such a sanction really creates a shock. What do I mean by that? The amount of oil which is generally available at any point in time, and it's largely controlled by the persons who, the oil producing countries, especially OPEC, that cartel type of organization. And they usually decide, we're going to pump more. No, we're not going to pump more. And we've seen very clearly that prior to and during discussions about the sanction on Russian oil, OPEC made it very clear that they don't intend to increase production. Why would they want to not do that? Why would they not want to be good citizens of the world? Well, here's an opportunity as oil-producing countries to make more money. And so if they can keep the supply at the current level or depressed as a result of you taking out Russia from the equation, then obviously we can see the prices go up. We have seen on the eve of the announcement, prices broke through 130, went all the way up to $139 per barrel. So if this hostility was to be extended over any long period of time, then we can really, really expect some shifts there. We have seen where analysts have projected $150 per barrel, and some have gone as far as $200 per barrel. What does that mean for us here in the Bahamas? What does that mean for us here in the Caribbean region? What countries that do not produce oil but depend heavily on fossil fuel for its energy? Well, in context, if we were to get to $200, for example, and you go back to 2019, 2020, 2022, you would see that prices were meandering in the mid-50s up to 70s, and then latterly, last year, early into this year, into the 80s. 200, therefore, represents a more than doubling of the cost of fuel, the cost of oil. And anything that you are using, which is so significant an input, and the price doubles, the implications, I think, is clear. And so we have to keep an eye on that very, 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 very significantly. The second thing which Mr. Stewart outlined is that the ensuing sanctions have plunged Russia into a financial crisis, a deep recession. Less than a fortnight, the ruble has dropped by more than 40% to a record low, and Russia's central bank has doubled interest rate to 20% to try to support the currency. We know pretty much most of that. Here is the point I would like to highlight to you. The speed at which this is happening is, if you were riding a bike and you were going at this speed, we would be telling you that you're reckless. Obviously, you do not want to attach the word reckless to sanctions and initiatives which are designed to protect humanity. So we won't use that word. But from a economic point of view, from the perspective of the potential impact on the additional increases in inflation, this is breakneck speed. in a very, very, very short period. Remember now, the war is going on now for 13 days, I think, 13, 14 days at the most, 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, Russia has been decoupled for the most part from the rest of the world. Russia has seen the level of sanctions come through, which is beyond what has been done in any other time or any other skirmish in the world. You have entities, NATO and so on, who has never ever thrown their hat into skirmishes which do not involve them in this sort of a way. You have Germany, for example, talking about, you know, significantly increasing security budget. You have persons now starting to think about how do we re-engage, or at least they are maybe reminiscing and regretting having ratcheted down the reliance on nuclear energy. So there has been a significant fundamental shift over 10 days or so. And this is rippling through the world. Now, here is why it's important for us to pay attention to this. Because Russia is so connected to the production and sale for energy, and because Russia and Ukraine together are so connected with the supply of wheat or grain, I think collectively they are responsible for about 30% of global supplies. It becomes very, very, very important for us to pay attention, because every single shift in these commodities, which are highly traded commodities and they are futures price, and you can go online and check the risk. As these shift, every single moment that they shift, the impact is immediate. So it's no longer, hey, you know, there's a war over there, and so some things are going to slow down, but not so bad, and it will take maybe a month or two to affect the Bahamas. Absolutely not. Not in this instance. The every single tick of the price on oil, every single tick of the price on gas, every uptick of the price on wheat, every single impact on supply chains, some moment that the lead time for a particular good that we need in this part of the world extends, every moment that there is increase in the cost of shipping, in the cost of ground transportation, the consumer is going to feel it. And the consumer is going to feel this in an environment which is already inflationary as a result of the COVID crisis. And therefore, we can expect and anticipate that this upward push, an adverse push, is just going to make life that more difficult for many of us. Number three, he points out, is that the European inflation is already at multi-decades high, and soaring commodity prices will give it another significant leg up. So before the invasion, economists on average, inflation that is that Eurozone, inflation to average around 3% this year, and UK would be at around 4.5%. The actual outturn could easily be 1.5 to 2% higher. So you could see the Eurozone at 5% and UK at about 6.5%. And here is an important aspect which will to factor in to our discussion here. Wages are unlikely to keep pace, pointing to a contraction in spending power for many European workers. So let's shift away from Europe for the time being. That's where the writer of these things are from. But let's shift away from that. And let's say that this same thing is impacting the United States, is impacting Canada, is impacting the areas where the Bahamian tourist market emerges from. You start to see the connections. Because when inflation bites and wages doesn't keep pace, there is going to be a damper or a contraction on spending. Tourism dollars largely come from persons making decisions with discretionary spending. And so if there is a damper there, while we are significantly far away from the physical crisis itself, from the physical fighting itself, the impact could be significant. And here we are. We are just recovering, coming out of the effects of COVID. We hear reports of about 60% up on revenue. Very, very positive. That's a good thing, a good place that we are at, nascent as it may be. But it's trending in the right direction. This development could damper that. And that is one of the things which I personally am very concerned about, because momentum is important. Momentum, we have some momentum going. And to the extent that that momentum stalls, and to the extent that this hostility meanders and lengthens and get into weeks and months, we could have a bit of a problem. We could have a bit of a problem. Because right as we speak, we know that the government recently put out the financial strategy report, recently put out some numbers. But as we speak, I am sure that those numbers are morphing. And they're morphing because the economic environment will require adjustment in policy, fiscal policy. We had a raging discussion going about the need for increased revenue, and we're going to look at taxation and so on and so forth. Those discussions have to again be refined because of the impact and the pressure that the current circumstances is bringing to them. So this is not a walk in the park for us. We really have to pay attention to what is happening. Again, if you want to join us, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. We love to hear from you. We have a text here. Question: the government advised Bahamians not to do business with Russians. You see the high costs of living in the Bahamas. We need money. Which business person in Nassau will turn down business with Russia? It's against our religion in Nassau to turn down money. Well, okay. It's a point. The fact of the matter is, I think the government, by making that announcement, did the responsible and the right thing. No matter how you want to slice it, Texter, we are going to line up on the side of the West, yeah? The Western side of the world. And that is not a physical location. It's a philosophical position. We are with the West. And if you want to zero in on that a little bit sharper, we are going to line up on the side and behind the portion where the United States is. And to say or to do anything other than indicate that we should be mindful in terms of doing business with Russia at this time is certainly not in the interest of our economic or national health. It's just not. It isn't. It would be a reckless thing to do. To the extent that we have businesses in the country that does business with Russians and continue to go about it in a cavalier or reckless way, because the government did not say don't do business with Russians. It says be careful. It didn't say don't. It advises caution on doing business, because I think there must be a recognition that, hey, maybe there are some ongoing transactions, maybe some things have been done, but be cautious about it. For the leadership of the country to step out and say that, I think is top shelf representation. It's the way to go. And to do otherwise, I think, would be careless and would be reckless. Now, if it's against our religion to turn down money, you know, some of the times, not doing a thing will make you richer. In some instances, if we are going to, and I'm not sure that there is sufficient critical mass for this to be a real possibility, but if we were to go out and do oodles and oodles of business with Russia, we would be putting the health of the country And by health, I mean a different from different perspective, not just economic, but of course, we were thinking about the relationships that we have with some of our closest trading partners, certainly our closest neighbor, United States, certainly the relationship with the West, and in some instances with other countries within the region who has taken a different position, maybe not as hard as other larger countries, but we have to bear that in mind. The sort of texter says, I don't even want to put this in the atmosphere, but it is what it is. Question, how close are we, in your opinion, to World War III? Because I see billionaires taking trips to Mars. Is that coincident? I don't think so. Something brewing. How close are we to World War III? I think we are very far from World War III. And I say that because of this. This Ukrainian-Russian hostility could trigger World War III. But pay attention very closely to the restraint which has been exerted so far. Ukraine want to be a NATO member. Russia don't want him to be a NATO member. And NATO don't want to get involved in this war in any way, shape, or form. The restraints and the use of sanctions and seeking for diplomatic solution suggest to me that we are nowhere near on the brink of World War II, unless somebody did something very radical and very foolish. And then you could have that triggering something devastating. We have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on Guardian Radio, Guardian AM. Go ahead.
Hey, good day, Mr. Edwards.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I hope all is well with you.
All is well.
So, Mr. Edwards, let me ask you a question. Basically every country that is a part of NATO or the UN, as we can see throughout the world, mm-hmm. There might not be a rending. They render assistance as far as food, military equipment, mm-hmm. but where does it leave us as a little country that does business with a place like in the East?
Like where?
Like when you Ukraine and Russia, because, you know, as small as our country is, Mr. Edwards, mm-hmm. it's a serious decision that the government have to make, because if you find our neighboring country, you know, they say when we catch a cold, when the U.S. catch a cold, we blow our nose off.
Yeah.
So if the U.S. have sanctions on Russia and we are part of every organization when it comes to CARICOM, the U.N., you know, whatever, we are part of it, you mm-hmm. know, because we signed a treaty. And, you know, there's certain things, Mr. Edwards, as a government, you have to make some decisions. We're going to hurt some people or people going to dislike.
Mm-hmm.
But to save your country for future, you have to make a decision. And I think that the prime minister with this situation here This is his biggest task, you know. But at the end of the day, we don't want, in all honesty, the United States to put sanctions on us for not complying with certain things. And you know, let's be realistic, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah,
we can't take care of ourselves.
We can't.
No, we can't.
How you mean?
We. Okay, right now, God forbid, and people, don't take me wrong, what I'm going to say. Just say the U.S. put sanctions on the Bahamas for a year. No. Mr. Edwards, let's be realistic.
For what?
I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah.
I'm hypothetically speaking. Yeah. Do you think that we can sustain ourselves for a year? The country.
You mean sustain ourselves at the same
as standard? Everything. We don't have no flights coming in from the U.S. We don't have nothing coming into our ports.
Oh, okay.
Nothing.
I get you. Yeah, it would be rough. It would be rough.
Okay.
But we wouldn't die.
We wouldn't die.
We'd have to make
adjustments.
We would suffer, yes. We just have to make adjustments. You know, Carla.
Yes, sir.
And this is personal, right? it's a personal kind of my personal view. You know, just when you tell me that I can't survive without another entity or another person, my natural reaction is to reject that. Right? My response to that is, it will be uncomfortable, and I will have to make some decision as to how I deal with that discomfort, right? But to live in a way which says I absolutely need another entity. Yes, we need people. Yes, it's good. But to say I absolutely need and I can't survive absolutely without, it's in my mind a limited way of thinking and have its own set of implications for our own growth and development.
But Mr. Edwards, let's be realistic. We live in a 21/7.
Yes.
Right? And we, our main income in this country is tourism.
Yes.
And, sir, if sanctions were ever given on the country.
Yeah, it would be.
It would be really, really.
It would be challenging.
Those two things. Sanctions with the airlines and the ports, that's it for this country.
Yeah.
For a long time.
It would be challenging. But
very challenging.
We'll have to go find other ways of surviving. I mean, given that you're putting together a worst-case scenario, which is unlikely to happen.
No, I wouldn't. Don't get me wrong. I'm just hypothetically
speaking.
No,
I understand that.
Saying,
I understand that.
The U.S. has a way of making countries comply with their rules. And sometimes they can be very, you know.
To be proper, the U.S. protects its interests.
Bingo.
Which is what all countries should do.
And that's why you see, I hang up on this.
Yeah.
That's why you see when they build certain things, that place, we wouldn't call the name, but they moved from across the road from the hotel. They were very skeptical. Have a good day, Mr.
Yeah, we won't speculate on that. Thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I'll get to you the other 3 points. And then I want to share with you something which occurred yesterday, which may give us a window of the type of adjustments which are going to be necessary going forward. You're listening to Guardian AM. Don't move. Come right back.
Show, you can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian AM. We're having ourselves a conversation around the Ukraine-Russia skirmish war. Hostilities, and how that is sending tremors across the world and will be definitely impacting us here in the Bahamas and the Caribbean region. and highlighting the fact that the cadence, the speed at which these things are happening is really, really important because, you know, we already were in an environment with so much uncertainty, a very disruptive environment. And to have this additional layer of complexity, uncertainty being thrown at us, it becomes challenging. And I'm sure that those who run the country, those who deal with the finances of the country, not having the most comfortable and enjoyable time at this moment, because every minute, as every tick of the clock, something is changing. The fourth point I want to draw to your attention, as stated by Mr. Ian Stewart, is that higher inflation and a squeeze on spending power complicate the decision facing Western central banks that were poised to tighten monetary policy. Now, there are two sides to this. So the monetary policy tightening would involve potentially an increase in interest rates. From our perspective, the extent to which that slows down for the Bahamas is a good thing. Because we have a significant amount of U.S. dollar or currency debt. And the extent to which those interest rates on those debts increase, that means we are going to pay more. So the slowing down of that is beneficial to the Bahamas in that regard. But there's another side to it. The temptation to slow down is out of a recognition of where we are right now in the world. And the reason you raise interest rate basically is to curtail consumption, is to make it more difficult to access credit, yeah? Because people, the more money you can access, the more you go out and buy. But it's kind of the exact treatment which is needed in an inflationary environment. So you kind of slow down demand and kind of pull down the inflation. So here it is that if they are being tempted to go slower on that, it means that the period of high inflation could become elongated. So while we may benefit from not increasing the interest rate on one hand, we always going to be getting knocked on the other side where we are going to be faced with high inflation. And you know, the fact that we purchase so much of our goods from these other countries, it means that we are going to be buying, purchasing inflation at a higher level over a longer period of time. So it's complex, it's complicated, and it's a reason we have to consistently pay attention to this, and I'm sure the policymakers are doing just that. Growth in the U.S. will be weaker than previously expected. Hear that? The caller earlier says when the U.S. have a cold or sneeze, the Bahamas catches a cold. There is this rule of thumb, or at least this view, that when the United States is doing good, the Bahamas is doing good. And that's generally true because it forms a large part of our market for our number one industry, tourism. So we want the United States to be doing good. But out of this crisis, out of this event, it is saying that both U.S. and Europe, we get some of our markets in Europe, is likely to grow at a weaker level. And there is some projection that it could be down by 0.3% as a result of the invasion. And if that goes longer, then obviously then that rate may change. So we need to pay attention to that aspect also. The sixth thing is, as he writes here, given the uncertainties, expected greater caution in financial markets and real economy. In the last fortnight, investors have rotated into supposedly safer assets, such as the dollar, Western government bonds, golds and shares in large companies. What might that mean for the Bahamas? It might mean that decisions which would have affected foreign direct investments may change. Because of the volatility, because of the uncertainty, persons may delay certain decisions and move into safe harbor type investment, i.e. usually the money runs to the United States and get into government treasuries which are considered to be, you know, almost risk-free. So it's not a straight walk. It's not something to be glossed over. It's not an issue to just say, well, the war is going and prices are going to go up. Yes, that will happen. But there are wider and deeper implications. As we would have seen, the Ministry of Tourism was attached to investments. And that was, I think, strategic in terms of going out there and beating the bush and trying to bring foreign direct investment and also drum up local investment for domestic investment for the country. If persons are now making decision or at least taking a wait and see approach as to what they may want to do, it could delay some things. And the timeline in terms of the projection for seeing green shoots on initiatives which may be in train, which may be ready to, as persons in the administration like to say, put shovels in the ground, that could have impact on us. It could affect employment, but certainly projected revenues could change. And we'll have to now start to think, if the revenues are trending down or will trend down as a result of that, what areas of expenditure may have to be curtailed, and the extent to which the goods and services that we enjoy from the provision of government will have to be lessened. So, you know, let's take a very, very careful look, a very serious look at what is happening in Russia and Ukraine. And let's see the responses which are coming in from the rest of the world. And let's start to assess and analyze and make some decisions as to, you know, what we're going to do, even in our own personal lives. I think it's important to make an adjustment there. If Texas says, if a World War III going to start, I ain't fighting no fight, I ain't start, I ain't losing no leg or arm for no one, so I letting the government know from now, don't ask me. Well, you know, you would be, based on what you have written here, they would call you a conscientious objector. And if you're a conscientious objector, where you say, I will not fight for any reason, based on where we are today, may not have been this clear way back in the days, but based on where we are today with human rights and the rights of the person and the stuff, nobody's going to send you to war. Now, they may send you to the place around the back where they pack sand and all of that sort of thing. But, you know, if war come, believe me, most of us will be fighting in one way, shape, or form. Not a lot of us from here, but a World War III, you're going to get involved. If you don't get involved by fighting, at least you get involved by rationing food and being a little bit more hungry so that some of the fighters on the forefront of the war can get more food. So you'll contribute one way or the next. Is there a middle ground for us? Could we do business with Russia and also ban flights from Russia in our airspace? In other words, could we be on both sides of the fence? Being on both sides of the fence is a very dangerous thing. Very, very dangerous thing. But to the extent that you want to be a neutral entity, that will depend on our foreign policy, the way we want to engage with our partners, and that is going to be a decision left to the authorities. I believe that, you know, on the fence in this particular scenario may not be the best thing for the Bahamas. We have a caller. Caller, go ahead.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. And you?
I'm doing fine. Can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you clearly.
Okay, great, because you're coming a little over here, coming across. On that same nugget that you're on right now, in terms of the type of partner that one would desire to be as it relates to your foreign policy and as it relates to your independent position and how you're going to respond is where I want to jump in. And I want to point out something that's very important that has just taking place over the last, I guess, 24, 48 hours.
Anton,
yes.
One caveat, you have to go very fast. We don't have a lot of time.
Okay, fine. If you note, the United States has passed their, or is getting ready to pass their second round of sanctions against Russia, right?
Yes.
and they are looking to stop the importation of any gas and energy products from Russia, right? As well as restrict their access to or eliminate their access to their airspace.
That's a done deal.
However, can you hear me, Yuban?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Europe, on the other hand, is imposing sanctions, but they are still purchasing their gasoline and oil products from Russia. As a matter of fact, Russia supplies them with up to 60% of their oil and gas products that they purchase.
That's true.
For the European countries. Mm-hmm. And so it only goes to show you, but at the end of the day, people are going to apply sanctions, but they're going to do those and still protect their best interests, despite what is happening by any other superpower in the nation. And Europe being one of the superpowers on the planet. And so the Bahamas government has to take the very same approach. We could look to apply sanctions, in my opinion, from a humanitarian perspective, because it is just point blank wrong. However, we still must protect our own short, medium, and long-term interests at the end of the day as a sovereign government. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for your contribution. Certainly the Bahamas has to do what's in the best interest of the Bahamas. And as I said before, in the best interest of the Bahamas, it will take into consideration what has been done by our partners, our neighbors, and our friends on the philosophical side of the West. Thank you for your contribution. This person says, Americans have sanctions on Cuba and the Bahamas don't. Are we suffering as a result? No, I'm not sure why we said that. We're taking a break now. Okay, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will bring this to a wrap.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back. As we heard going out, you know, these are things that we have to be careful about. We have to be sensitive, and we have to be wise. But at the end of the day, the Bahamas is, and we have to trust that the leaders do this, and I've done this over a long period of time, but they will do whatsoever is in the best interest of the country. Sometimes you don't agree, sometimes I don't agree. But at the end of the day, we don't always have all of the same facts, and so we have to be mindful of that. This texter says, as a country, we can't only want the benefits of an alliance or friendship, but when the hard decisions need to be supported, we say that's your concern. It goes both ways and sometimes requires the hard support. Anyway, that's how I see it. Texter, I agree with you 100%, but bear in mind that still, It has to be contextualized. I listened recently to a speech from Mia Motley, and Mia Motley says, and she keeps repeating, a statement which was made by one of the earlier prime ministers, which says, we are a friend to all and a satellite to none. A friend to all and a satellite to none. If that is a philosophical position for Barbados, for example, which drives its foreign policy, then you could expect, for example, an argument from Barbados to say, we're not putting sanctions on anybody unless we ourselves are agreeable to doing that, because we do not line up with anybody, because we are friends of everybody. But not every country takes that position. We all have our own alliances. We all have our own grouping. And to the extent that we do, then obviously there is a need for support. Very quickly, yesterday was the opening of Parliament for the opening of the budget debate in Jamaica. And I see some very interesting things on the war, which I want to share with you quickly as we get to the end of the show. We have a caller, though. Caller, go ahead. You can get this in a couple of minutes. Hello?
Yes, good morning. How are you doing, Mr. Edwards?
Morning. How are you doing, 52?
Great show as usual. You heard the speech from Mia Motley.
I listened to the speech. Powerful speech.
You know, and hearing that speech, my mind went on Marcus, Malcolm, Lumumba,
yes.
Stephen Biko, Bob Marley, everybody.
Yes.
That I almost brought to tears, right?
Yeah.
And so, of course, the statement was aphoristic, but the thing is, something she said is very integral.
Uh-huh.
She said, there's no such thing. She said, there's no such thing as doing the wrong thing at the right time.
You're right.
She said, so that means that you have to do what you have to do now. We know that the geopolitical theatrics, right,
mm-hmm.
is taking away a lot of perspectives.
Right.
Especially, you know, I look at the international imbecilic media, right? You just don't trust things at face value, but of course America's our neighbor. We have American families, et cetera, but sovereignty is out the door. These scenarios are designed to get rid of nation states, and we have a certain amount of amalgamism to America. But, you know, I mean, the country got to do what? Now I'll ask you a question. What is best for us then? Because it's all based on consciousness and opinions. Have a good day.
Yeah, yeah. What is best for us is that, you know, we don't shoot ourselves in the foot or shoot ourselves in the head. I think we have to make sure that the survival of the country is protected and the ability to grow and develop. It doesn't mean that you're going to line up every single time with your friends. You have friends. You don't always agree with them, do you? But in the instance where our philosophy and our values align, in the instance where we need to take a stand and to send a very clear message, then we ought to. So very quickly, the government of Jamaica had its opening of its debate. And so, you know, they kind of touch on the Ukraine, the war in Ukraine. And I think the Minister of Finance did this in order to set the tone as to what potential adjustment will come out of the Ukraine. And he listed three things. He said there are three main economic channels to which the crisis could impact Jamaica. First is the increase in energy and commodity prices, including wheat and other grains. Higher commodity prices today means that the average inflation for the upcoming fiscal year could be higher than previously anticipated. Second, this inflationary pressure exacerbates recent supply chain disruption, negatively impacts the rebound from the COVID-19 pandemic, and increases the likelihood that global economic growth could slow, which could impact Jamaica's growth. Third is the potential impact of adverse financial flows as global investors seek safer asset classes. Exactly what we just discussed just now. We are closely monitoring developments and the reactions of the market. We will ensure that the poor and vulnerable are protected from the worst effects of this crisis. The Jamaican economy is resilient and will weather the storm. I think that would be the same thing that would apply in the Bahamas. Sound like a speech that could apply here. But I also want to draw attention to something which he pointed out, and this is coming off the back of the significant decline in growth in the world last year or the year before. And he was making the point that, you know, some persons were saying the Jamaica is growing because countries generally grow after every decline. And he pointed out that in 1977, there was a 6.7% decline. In 1976, there was 6.7 decline, but there was no growth in 1977. In 1985, there was a 4.5% decline, but there was no growth in 1986. In 2009, there was a 3.2% decrease, but there was no growth in 2020. And he's trying to make the point that, look, they are doing some things to put together some strategies to break the cycle so that you have consistent growth. Among other factors, our economic recovery benefited from, these are things which the Minister of Finance says, first, by putting in place buffers, fiscal buffers. We took the strategic decision to increase cash cushions through privatization, reintegration of public bodies, and targeted fiscal overperformance. Monetary buffers. We took the strategic decision to increase non-borrow reserve by US $1 billion since 2016 through the policy choices of exchange rate flexibility and inflation targeting, which also brought the period to its lowest annual percentage depreciation of any administration over the last 30 years. A little bit political. Resilience buffers. We took the strategic decision to put away resources in 2018 and 2019 in disaster funds that we were able to draw down in the first few months of the pandemic. Capitalized central bank. We took the strategic decision to capitalize the Bank of Jamaica with $20 billion in 2018 and 2019, which allowed it to make unprecedented liquidity injections into the banking system. And second, by making sustainable and internally consistent policy choices during the crisis and having the discipline to reject ideas that fell outside of that criteria. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, but I hope that little bit of a salve will give us an indication of where we may need to go as we respond to these global pressures coming at you. I want to say, do not ever allow your greatness to be a victim of your unwillingness to change. Walk good, be safe, Ubuntu, and one love.